Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 146, recorded January 14th, 2013.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
We are back after our little break.
Yeah, it was kind of a crazy time, wasn't it?
Well, yes, and I kind of feel like we owe you guys an explanation after having done an episode on Christmas Eve. And then we took Epiphany off, you know. But my sister was having a baby, and I was assisting.
Pretty good reason.
So we had our hands full. So we decided we'll just take the week off. And
yeah. So now we're back. Mm-hmm. So, what do we have lined up for today?
Well, you have a few things for us today, and we're going to hear from Mike in Georgia, and Sean in California, and Matt in Perth, Australia.
Cool. Shall we begin with our stuff?
Let's start with our stuff.
Okay. Well, a couple things. We had the birth of some, or the hatching of some baby bristlenoses in a tank in our bedroom. That was fun. Quite a few of them. There's a high proportion of albinos in this batch, which is kind of fun to see. This is our fourth generation, I think.
Is it really?
I believe it is.
Wow.
Which means I'm starting to get a little worried about inbreeding, so
we need to get a few more
new stock.
Yeah.
But it's just fun to see them hatch and do their thing. We've converted that tank, used to be the Beta Sorority, into... Well, it's mostly got red cherry shrimp in it, and now it's got the baby bristlies in there. It's had a pair of bristlies in there for a while. So
you did that because you wanted, it was having some algae problems, and you wanted to get those under control before you put anything else in
it, right? Right, and that's helping a bit
by bit.
We
moved all the female betas into the 55.
Yep, and they're looking good.
And there's how many of them in there? 27?
I don't know.
28? There's a lot, yeah.
We also sold some betas, which we mentioned, I think, sold some on Aquabed, so we shipped three bettas out to Sam in Illinois, I believe it was. I just wanted to detail a little bit how we shipped those. It's cold right now.
It's
really
been
cold.
So cold. Stupid cold.
Yeah.
So cold that you just think, it's stupid. Why should it be this cold? It should not be this cold.
So cold that honestly, if I'm walking outside for any length of time, which I have occasion to do on a regular basis lately, I get icicles in my beard. It's not very fun.
It's sick and wrong.
So, there you go.
It's cold.
yeah. And I'm not exaggerating, am I?
No.
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 I'm not. So, there you go. So, we were a little worried about that, but this is what we decided to do. To ship these fish out. Got a box, and I went and bought a chunk of styrofoam, polystyrene material. It was the type sold in a hardware store with Mylar backing. And that's important, too, because that helps retain heat. So it was, I think, 3/4 inch thick, and cut it to size to fit in a box so that both the bottom, all four walls, and the top were just, you know, this polystyrene. And then inside there, I made a little pouch out of, a Mylar bubble wrap.
So what did you do with the Mylar bubble wrap?
Well, I made a little pouch out of it, and I put one of those heat packs in it.
And you can get those, it's like the little...
ones that are used for camping.
Right, you put them in the toes of your socks or in your gloves.
And right. And they work, basically, they require oxygen. The thing is, if you put them in this little Mylar pouch, Mylar bubble wrap pouch, and then you put them inside the insulated box... they get oxygen very slowly, and so they slow down. The reaction slows down, slower than it would be if it were sitting, say, in your glove. And so you can get more time out of it, but you get less heat, but you don't want a whole lot of heat, because those things can get up pretty hot, uncomfortably hot, if they have a lot of oxygen, but you just are kind of slowing the reaction down, and so the rate of the reaction down. And so it can keep your fish warm, and they arrived just fine, and we heard from Sam, and he said the fish were all doing well, and
he liked
them. He was happy with them. Yeah, so there you go. So it's something to think about. If you need to build one of those boxes, that the polystyrene doesn't cost very much. It was about $250 for a big old piece of it that was I think about 4 feet long and 2 feet wide. So that's not much.
No, it was pretty good.
Depends on the thickness, too. But we'll get back to polystyrene in a little while.
Oh, we will we?
Yeah, we will. Mm-hmm. But that's about does it for us this week, I think.
Okay. Well, let's go to our contributors. Mike in Georgia. And I'm assuming this is Georgia the state, not Georgia the country.
That's right. He is a new contributor, though. This is his first...
Which is always good.
Yeah, so welcome.
And he says, "Hey, guys, I recently ran across your podcast and had a chance to listen to quite the backlog of podcasts over my 28 hours round trip driving for Christmas vacation.
Okay,
so... We are pleased to have been able to keep you awake while you were driving."
And we're amazed that you actually did stay awake. Well, that's cool. I'm glad that you enjoyed it.
Says, "I am excited to hear new podcasts now that I am caught up and hope that I can be a contributor with both questions and answers. I am the co-founder of an up-and-coming beta community," and that's betasource.com. Are we going to put a link?
Yeah, we can put a link to it and check that out. Yeah, everybody check it out.
And get some odd questions from time to time. One that I was not 100% sure on the answer of pertains to garlic. A user asked, "I want to know if anyone can give me some info about treating internal parasites with garlic." And Mike says, "I would say the primary use is to increase appetite, particularly in finicky eaters, to encourage feeding or ingestion of medication, but the garlic itself does not directly contribute to fighting any type of parasitic infection. Again, I thank you for your time, knowledge, and effort that you put into your podcast."
Well, you're welcome. This is a great question.
Give us your take on garlic.
Okay.
I guess it's not parasites, but I like to just have garlic when we're sick. It kills germs.
There's a lot of things that garlic can do.
I don't know what about parasites.
Well, this is the interesting thing. It's known widely as an appetite stimulant. Mm-hmm. You know, in aquarium fish, it's used as an attractant for game fish.
Mm-hmm.
Fishermen like to use it, garlic-flavored marshmallow bait, and
right.
so on. So it's widely recognized as an appetite stimulant. But actually, a lot of studies have been done on garlic as anti-parasitic. And other things, too. But among the things that has been studied for is this idea of treating parasites, both piscine and otherwise.
So what have they found?
Well, some of the studies do seem to indicate that there's a positive effect against parasites.
That's good.
It's also been... There's a link to a study that I put up, or I will put up on the show page, in PDF form. And this study compares garlic, chamomile, and a control group in treating ick, which is, of course, an external parasite.
Right.
But
still
it
parasite.
Is a parasite. Yeah, and both treatments, both the garlic and the ick, decreased the ick. And the control group had it after the experimental treatment.
Hmm.
The control group still had it, but the garlic did... apparently successfully treated. The group that ate the garlic had lower mortality and higher growth rate than either of the other groups. And there could be a lot of reasons for this. I mean, it's just one study, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
you said there were several studies done, though.
There are lots of studies done on garlic in general, but this is just one of the ones that I'm aware of that I looked up and saw this.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say, okay, this means... ick is going to be treatable by garlic in all cases, but this study seemed to indicate that, so it was interesting. But of course, that's an external parasite, not an internal parasite, and that doesn't necessarily mean...
Well, it would probably depend on the parasite too. I mean, there's lots of different parasites.
There are, and there are studies with garlic as a treatment for human intestinal protozoan. So there goes an internal parasite, but it's not for fish.
Mm-hmm.
I saw one that I didn't actually read through, but I saw they have one. As an anti-helminthic for donkeys.
Say that again?
Anti-helminthic.
What exactly does that mean?
Treats flatworms. So.
Helminthic?
Helminthic.
Helminthic.
Yeah.
That's a tricky one.
Yeah. So, and I, you know, there are a lot of literature out there that I haven't read. I have to admit that. But there, from what I have read, garlic does seem to be an immunostimulant. So it could help treat a lot of things, sort of broad spectrum, that way, just mm-hmm. by stimulating the immune system. And is an appetite stimulant, and a lot of times when fish are sick, you can't get them to eat.
That's half the problem.
That's half the battle there.
And that's something that Mike mentioned too himself about getting them to eat medication by having them eat garlic. So there may be other things going on there too. I haven't done any empirical studies on it, of course, but
it does seem though that there's some, you know, some things to point in that direction that it could be helpful.
That it could be helpful, and maybe do a little bit more
probably couldn't
study
hurt
in the area.
How do they deliver the garlic? I mean, is there fish dosages of garlic that they have in medication form that you put in the water, or that you feed them as pellets, or do you just drop in some raw bits of garlic and hope they eat it?
Well, all of the above are possible and have been done. Mick in Carnforth uses dry garlic granules as part of his fish diets.
Oh.
Worked for him. We've talked about that on the podcast before. I have chopped up fresh raw garlic.
Do you like that?
Well, I don't give it to him straight. What I do is chop it up, put it in a dropper bottle with some purified water, and that sort of permeates the water after a while. You let it sit for a few days in the refrigerator, permeates the water, and then I use that water as a soak for pellets, and then I give the fish the pellets, and they really go after the pellets.
I see.
And it's soaked that way. And do you remember we had the problem with, who was that? With the one the kids called Poofy Mushroom Fish?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was injured, and when we bought him, and we were aware of that, but we wanted to try to rescue him. And we did get his wound to heal over, because it was an external sort of scrape along his side, and we got it to heal over. But he died not too long after that, and we believed that there was still something going on inside. But anyway, during that time, I was administering garlic to all the fish, and the other fish didn't contract anything. And apparently, it didn't help him much, but it.
They ate it.
Yeah, the other fish ate it, and they're doing fine. But that doesn't, you know, that's doesn't really say a whole lot except for that it didn't hurt them at all.
Right.
It's the only thing it really says.
Yeah,
but
it kind of sounds like, well, maybe it will help, and even if it doesn't, it's not going to hurt anything.
Yeah.
Since you can't smell fish breath.
And they certainly like it. It's obvious that they like it. And there are a lot of foods that have it in it already. I use some foods. I'm pretty sure that the beta pellets that we have some garlic added to them. Could be wrong, but I think that's in the formulation. So there are lots of foods that have it in it. The New Life Spectrum has it in it, that we've got right up there on the 55. There's a lot of different foods that have garlic in them. There are a couple of brands, at least two I can think of. There's Garlic Guard and Garlic Extreme, which are both garlic extracts sold specifically for aquarium fish.
Hmm.
So there are lots of methods of delivery that you can look into. So, yeah.
It would be interesting to see what methods of delivery they used in the studies.
Yeah.
If that makes a difference.
Excuse me. I'm sure that could make a difference. I don't recall what was used in the study that we're going to put on the show
page. I mean,
page,
it just seems like something that gives it to the fish and is still in a more raw, unadulterated state rather than, you know,
cooked and processed.
Dried and cooked and, right. It seems like that would be more effective.
I would suspect
that would be more effective.
Right. The allicin, which I believe is the active compound that's usually considered the most therapeutic of all the things that are in garlic. There are others too, but that one is apparently destroyed by cooking, or can be.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense.
Right.
Okay. Well, hopefully, Mike, that helped a little bit, and we hope to be hearing from you more.
Yeah.
As a contributor to Aquarium Max.
Check out the Betasource.
Betasource.com, yeah, check that out.
Okay, let's go ahead and take our break, and then we'll be right back.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarium Max Show.
Now, there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarium Max. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629, or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. And now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, the podcast with Icy Nell.
Interesting bit of fishy news.
Yeah, well, I guess it's not really fishy, but
well,
it is oceanic and it's molluscan.
It is aquatic creature in the news.
Yes.
About that. I don't, some of you may have heard this.
Yeah, it's been fairly widely circulated, but...
But we got this from Sean.
Sean in California.
California.
Yeah. Who happens to be a personal friend of ours, but mm-hmm. it was fishy news, so we decided to include it.
Yeah.
Anyway, and it was about the giant squid that had been filmed and how that is going to be, the footage is going to be released on January 27th, so coming up soon.
To a theater near you. No, not really. That would be something, huh?
No. Well, Sean knew that it would appeal to us, and so he sent us this. And you can also see a couple of the photos of a young giant squid on film, which I think is pretty momentous.
It's pretty much a baby.
It's a very young one, yeah.
It's a very
it's
young
a juvenile.
One. It's, what, 9 feet long?
About 9 feet long, yeah.
Well, did they have a weight estimate on it?
I don't recall if they did, but it was interesting. So we'll put the link up in case you haven't seen it yet.
How big are they estimating that the adults get? Or do they have an estimate?
That depends on who you talk to.
Can
but
they just keep growing their whole life?
I don't know. I don't know a whole lot about them. I guess nobody does. But we're going to find out more about them soon.
Yeah.
But they do get quite a bit bigger. I think the estimates that I've heard are somewhere around 50, 60 feet long.
50, 60 feet long.
Yeah, something like
it's
that.
It's pretty amazing.
It is.
Kind of freaky.
That too.
But it's kind of cool because then you think, oh, all of those sailors who drew pictures on the maps, they weren't all drunk all the time.
Yeah, they.
It's like oarfish.
There was something to it all.
When you told me about oarfish, that is the coolest thing. They're a sea serpent.
Yeah, they look like a sea serpent.
They look like the sea serpent that, like, the Norse would draw the Vikings, and they totally look. And I just think that's really neat.
I think it's really neat too.
It's like a mythical creature that's not mythical anymore.
They're not quite as big as they were portrayed many times, but they are.
But when you're out in the middle
fish,
of the ocean in this teeny tiny little boat, I bet they looked that big.
Probably, they're pretty amazing fish.
How big do they get, oarfish?
I'm not sure exactly, but they get quite long.
Pretty big.
Yeah.
Are they aggressive?
I don't believe so, not to humans.
I wonder why they have pictures of them attacking the boats.
It makes for a better story.
Yes, I guess that's true.
Maybe that's why, out in the ocean, they have to think of something.
Yeah.
Okay, so thanks, Sean.
Did we put the link up on the page? So go watch that. Okay. Next, we have Matt in Australia, in Perth.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, G'day, Aquarimax.
I'd like to hear that in his real voice.
Yeah, I'm sure I don't do it justice.
No, I wasn't complaining. it's fun to hear that. The real Strawn version.
Strawn. Okay. Good news on the 120-centimeter aquarium. The algae is going away without hard work. Hooray! Over a few days, I only had a chance to feed them once a day. Normally, they get food twice a day. I noticed the algae beginning to die on the glass, so it turns out it was not the amount of fish that was the problem. I had obviously been overfeeding them.
Uh-huh. Well, that'll do it.
Mm-hmm. Now the 180-centimeter aquarium, which is 6 feet by 2 by 2 feet, has presented a problem. I want to transfer the fish from the 120-centimeter into the 180-centimeter. The problem is I cannot keep any of the limestone, as it will keep the pH too high for my discus and his friends.
Indeed.
However, I can't... So he's aquascape the 120 with limestone. That's what it is.
Yes.
And he's moving them, but he can't move those.
Right. He can't move the rocks because the limestone will indeed buffer the pH.
Okay. And he says, obviously, he doesn't want to keep it bare. So his question is, how do I aquascape it? Driftwood is expensive at the store, not easy to find in nature. I can get rocks without it being too expensive. So do you have any tips? He says, I don't want plants, but some nice rocks or wood would be great.
One thing, excuse me, doing that a lot this episode, sorry about that, says, I can get rocks without it being too expensive. I'm not sure if he meant can't get rocks without being too expensive. It may. I mean, that's not what it says here, but I'm just wondering about that.
I don't know.
Because it sounds like he's asking for alternatives to driftwood and rocks, perhaps. Well, if that is the case, and I may be misreading this here, here's just an idea. Talking about polystyrene again.
Oh, now we get back to it.
Yeah, you can get that same stuff from the hardware store. You peel off the backing, and you can cut it. You can use a jigsaw, you can use a kitchen knife, you can use whatever, and pile it in layers.
So, like, you would cut, if you wanted a round shape, you would cut out a round thing, and then cut out a smaller round thing, and then cut out a smaller round thing, and then cut out a smaller round thing, and cut out a smaller round thing.
That's one way to do it. I mean, some people set it up. set the layers on their sides so it looks like sedimentary rock and you can see the layers.
Oh.
And some people, instead, they just sort of put a flat bit on and then build up pieces. You know, so you can build rocks bulging out and so on. A couple of different ways to do it, but you do that and you glue them together with aquarium safe glue, like silicon, you know, thing like that. And then you paint them over with, well, one of the brand names is Quikrete.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a mortar, you know, cement type.
But it's not super
substance.
Heavy?
It's not super heavy, but yeah, you paint over it, and it's usually kind of a slurry consistency. So you paint over it, and then it looks like rock, basically. You put coloring in, too. There's concrete coloring you can get. And then
food coloring, but it's concrete.
Concrete
coloring,
yeah.
Wow.
And you can get it so it looks very natural. Mm-hmm. You can mix several colors, or you can do different parts of it in different colors, and whatever you want. And then after you painted several layers over that, then you have to kind of condition it. You have to put water in and drain it and fill it a few times to you know, get the pH so it's down back mm-hmm. again, because that would be an issue otherwise.
Okay.
Especially in a tank with viscous. And once you've done that, it looks very much like rock. But it isn't. So it's much lighter, easier to deal with.
You can get the shape exactly how you want.
You can get the shape precisely how you want. So, yeah, it wouldn't be driftwood.
Probably ends up being
cheaper. And I would believe, yeah, the rock is much more expensive in general. Good rock is much more expensive than doing this with the polystyrene. But you can really get it to look nice and natural. Like, something like you'd see in a public aquarium looks good.
Well, it sounds like a good,
I mean,
good alternative then.
It was from our last episode, I think it was Jaap from the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
He did that in his aquarium. It looks fabulous.
Did he send pictures?
Yeah, he sent a video and we put it up on the show page.
Oh, you should maybe send them to Matt too.
Yeah, and that was in just episode 145.
Oh,
you
well,
can just
there we
go to this new show page. It's right there and it looks really nice. And he may have already seen it, but that's...
Okay.
That's one alternative.
It's a good idea.
Because there are things about rocks, you know, in your aquarium. You can't necessarily just go collect them. I mean, you can, but once you put them in your aquarium, all sorts of funky things can happen.
Because
you never know
where they've been or
where they've been.
On
unless you're a geologist, you know what types of rocks there. But even then, you're not entirely sure necessarily without conducting tests whether you're going to be leaching heavy metals into your tank or limestone, you know, if they're kind of rock that has... You can do tests. You can drop some muriatic acid or even some vinegar on a rock and see if it fizzes, and that will tell you if there are things that will leach out in terms of, you know, carbonates and so on. But
what does fizzing mean?
It means that there are carbonates in there.
Not fizzing.
So it will raise the pH of the water.
Okay.
And if they don't fizz, they won't. But that doesn't tell you about heavy metals. If there's cadmium or, you know, something in there, that could be a problem in the aquarium. So collecting your own rocks is a bit problematic, but doing this can be a successful way to do it. And you can check on YouTube.
You mentioned about putting, if you use the polystyrene in the Quikrete stuff, and you have to put it in the tank and fill it up and let it kind of soak and then take and drain it again. Mm-hmm. Can you drain it, soak it and drain it in another body of water so you don't have to keep filling and draining your tank?
You could.
And that would be okay.
That would be okay as long as it's done. You got to leach that stuff out of the water.
Okay.
But yeah, that's possible. And there are things online to show you in tutorials on YouTube. Like if you do it yourself aquarium background, and there are
all
several that will show up. Yeah, and do it. So it's kind of fun. I haven't done it myself actually. I'm just sort of passing
this
along.
I know you're very interested in it.
I'm very interested in it. I wanted to do it for a while, but it's kind of an undertaking.
I have another question.
Yes.
So you leach it several times, and then it's done leaching.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if you use the Quikrete, you have to soak it and leach it and just, you know, drain it a couple of times. And then it's done leaching after however long it takes. You know,
yes.
If you put it in your tank, it's not going to leach more or as much.
Essentially, yeah. There may be different brands that you can use that don't have to go through that step. I don't know. But the ones I know of, you have to do that.
So is that different with just real rocks? Because you were talking about being worried about leaching heavy metals into your tank. Can you not soak the rock and drain it and soak it again and drain it until it's done with that? Or will it just keep releasing because it's rock all the way through?
Well, with driftwood, you can usually soak and drain it a number of times. And then after that, any leaching of tannins and whatnot in the wood will be negligible, and you have to do it for quite a while.
It's not a big deal.
Right. You might get a little bit, you know, but once you do that initial leaching, which may take a few weeks, it's not that big of a deal, and I've done that before.
Okay.
But with rocks, it tends to be different, because if you put limestone rock in there, all of it's essentially limestone, and so it would take an extremely long time.
You'd have to leach away the entire rock,
Essentially, it would take a very long time to do it, and by the time you did, you might not have much rock left, so it might take, you know, thousands of years.
So it's kind of pointless.
The thing is, with quickcrete, most of the volume that's going into your tank is just polystyrene.
And that's not going to leach anything.
And that's not really leaching anything. That's essentially inert in the aquarium. But the quickcrete is just this thin layer. So it doesn't take that long to leach out there. But that's a good question.
That makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty. Anything else for Matt?
I think that is about it. So congratulations on your algae dying off.
Yes,
and
having good.
Determined that the feeding was an issue. And thank you to all of our contributors today. I think that's about all for this week. So in the meantime, until we see you next week,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.